spent his life championing civil rights for all Americans. I learned after Election Day there was that intimation throughout the campaign, recalls Stevenson. Stevenson's running mate, Grace Mary Stern, recalls, there was a very vigorous, anti-Stevenson, telephone campaign in the Jewish community. She says leaflets charging Stevenson with being anti-Israel were distributed widely at local Jewish temples, and adds there was much discussion of the anti-Semitism accusation. There was a very vigorous campaign, man to man, friend to friend, locker room to locker room. We never really came to grips with the problem. Campaign fundraising suffered accordingly. The Jewish community had supported Stevenson strongly in both of his campaigns for the Senate. After his remarks in the last years of his Senate career, some of the Jewish support dried up. In the end, Thompson was able to outspend Stevenson by better than 2-1. The only Jews who tried to counter the attack were those close to Stevenson. Philip Klutznik, prominent in Jewish affairs and chairman of the Stevenson Dinner Committee, said, "It is beneath the dignity of the Jewish community to introduce these issues into a gubernatorial campaign." Stevenson's campaign treasurer, Milton Fisher, said, "Adlai's views are probably consistent with 40% of the Knesset, Israeli parliament." Stevenson was ultimately defeated in the closest gubernatorial election in the state's history. The margin was 5,074 votes, 0.7% of the total 3.5 million votes cast. Thomas Adine, executive director of the American-Israel Public Affairs Committee, gloated, "The memory of Adlai Stevenson's hostility toward Israel during his Senate tenure lost him the Jewish vote in Illinois and that cost him the gubernatorial election." Stevenson too believes the effort to discredit him among Jews played a major role in his defeat. "In a race that close, it was more than enough to make the difference." Asked about the impact of the Israeli lobby on the US political scene, he responded without hesitation, "There is an intimidating, activist minority of American Jews that supports the decisions of the Israeli government, right or wrong. They do so very vocally and very aggressively in ways that intimidate others, so that it's their voice even though it's a minority that is heard and felt in American politics. But it still is much louder in the US than in Israel. In other words, you have a much stronger, more vocal dissent in Israel than within the Jewish community in the US. The Prime Minister of Israel has far more influence over American foreign policy in the Middle East than over the policies of his own government generally." A profile in Courage in 1963, Senator J. William Fulbright, of Arkansas, shared an investigation that brought to public attention the exceptionally favorable tax treatment of contributions to Israel and thereby aroused the ire of the Jewish community. The investigation was managed by Walter Pincus, a journalist Fulbright hired after reading a Pincus study of lobbying. Pincus recalls that Fulbright gave him a free hand, letting him choose the 10 prime lobbying activities to be examined, and backing him throughout the controversial investigation. One of the groups chosen by Pincus, himself Jewish, was the Jewish Telegraph Agency, at that time a principal instrument of the Israeli lobby. Both Fulbright and Pincus were accused of trying to destroy the Jewish Telegraph Agency, and of being anti-Semitic. Pincus remembers, several senators urged that the inquiry into the Jewish operation be dropped. Senators Hubert Humphrey and Bork Hickenlooper, then senior Republican on the Foreign Relations Committee, were among them. Fulbright refused. The Fulbright hearings also exposed the massive funding illegally channeled into the American Zionist Council by Israel. More than $5 million had been secretly poured into the council for spending on public relations firms and pro-Israel propaganda before Fulbright's committee closed down the operation. Despite his concern over the Israeli lobby, Fulbright took the exceptional step of recommending that the U.S. guarantee Israel's borders. In a major address in 1970, he proposed an American-Israeli treaty under which the U.S. would commit itself to intervene militarily, if necessary, to guarantee the territory and independence of Israel within the lands it held before the 1967 war. The treaty, he said, should be a supplement to a peace settlement arranged by the United Nations. The purpose of his proposal was to destroy the arguments of those who maintained that Israel needed the captured territory for its security. Fulbright saw Israeli withdrawal from the Arab lands it occupied in the 1967 war as the key to peace. Israel could not occupy Arab territory and have peace too. He said Israeli policy in establishing settlements on the territories has been characterized by lack of flexibility and foresight. As referred to earlier in the previous chapter, Fulbright, on CBS Television's Face the Nation in 1973, declared that the Senate was subservient to Israeli policies which were inimical to American interests. He said, "The U.S. bears a very great share of the responsibility for the continuation of Middle East violence. It's quite obvious that without the all-out support by the U.S. in money and weapons, the Israelis couldn't do what they've been doing." 39 Fulbright was saying 15 years ago what Yehoshaphat Huckabee is now saying in his book Israel's Fateful Hour, namely, that the U.S. is at fault for Israel's desperate situation, because the U.S. allowed Israel and the Likud to do whatever it wanted to do. And that the U.S. is responsible for the oncoming disaster to Israel. Fulbright said the U.S. failed to pressure Israel for a negotiated settlement, because the great majority of the Senate of the U.S., somewhere around 80%, are completely in support of Israel, anything Israel wants. This has been demonstrated time and time again, and this has made it difficult for our government. His criticism of Israeli policy caused concerns back home. Jews who had supported him in the past became restless. After years of easy election victories, trouble loomed for Fulbright for his Senate seat. Fulbright was defeated. He was on the enemies list. Several Jewish organizations claimed credit for Fulbright's defeat. Since his defeat, Fulbright has continued to speak out, decrying Israeli stubbornness and warning of the Israeli lobby. In a speech just before the end of his Senate term, Fulbright warned, "Endlessly pressing the U.S. for money and arms and invariably getting all and more than she asks, Israel makes bad use of a good friend." His central concern was that the Middle East conflict might flare into nuclear war. He warned somberly that Israel's supporters in the U.S. by underwriting intransigency are encouraging a course which must lead toward her destruction and just possibly ours as well. Fulbright sees little hope that Capitol Hill will effectively challenge the Israeli lobby. It's suicide for politicians to oppose them. The only possibility would be someone like Eisenhower, who already feels secure. Eisenhower has already made his reputation. He was already a great man in the eyes of the country, and he wasn't afraid of anybody. He said what he believed. Then he adds a somewhat more optimistic note, "I believe a president could do this. He wouldn't have to be named Eisenhower." Fulbright cites a missed opportunity. "I went to Jerry Ford after he took office in 1975.1 was out of office then. I had been to the Middle East and visited with some of the leading figures. I came back and told the president, 'Look, I think these Arab leaders are willing to accept Israel, but the Israelis have got to go back to the 1967 borders. The problem can be solved if you are willing to take a position on it.'" Ford, he said, did not take his advice. Senator William Hathaway's defeat in the spring of 1978, AIPAC unceremoniously abandoned another Senate Democrat with a consistent pro-Israeli record, Senator William Hathaway of Maine, who had, without exception, cast his vote in favor of Israel's interests, in favor of William S. Cohen, his Republican challenger. Hathaway had cooperated in 1975, when AIPAC sponsored its famous Spirit of 76 letter. It bore Hathaway's name and those of 75 of his colleagues, and carried this message to President Gerald R. Ford: "We urge that you reiterate our nation's long-standing commitment to Israel's security by a policy of continued military supplies, and diplomatic and economic support." Previously, Hathaway, on occasion, declined to sign certain sense of the Senate resolutions prepared by AIPAC. Ford, dissatisfied with Israeli behavior, had just issued a statement calling for a reappraisal of U.S. policies in the Middle East. His statement did not mention Israel by name as the offending party, but his message was clear: Ford wanted better cooperation in reaching a compromise.